Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Monday, the 19th of October. Very nice to have you with us on a chilly Monday.
Are you all cold?
Very chilly. Chilly weekend? I don't know if you... maybe you did, Alan. I don't know. Did you all see snow over the weekend?
We did.
Yep, I did.
Yeah.
We had snow. And we had a wonderful woman named Vera Argentini, who lived in our area for a while. Vera Argentini, married to a man named Paul. I don't know what their present status is, but...
and we're off.
Roselle would always say it's very... I don't remember how that went. Very cold around here. I said, no, it's very Argentine. Anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Argentine, isn't it?
Joe, help. We need a topic.
Okay, let's. Well, I'm going to introduce you. And then
that part.
So Alan's here, if you noticed, and Alan's here, and welcome, and Rosemary Armeo, who of course is a University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, and with us this morning, and we thank you very much for being here as always.
I love it.
Well, we love having you, and we love having Mike Spain with us as well. Libby is off, and I realizing this last night. I wrote Mike and I said, oh, by the way, could you come and join us?
So happy to be here,
here today and tomorrow, and we're very, very happy. So thank you very much for that. All right. Let us begin with the topics at hand, and a lot going on, but we'll get to all kinds of interesting things this morning and see what kind of trouble we can get into. And mostly that applies to Alan and Rosemary. All right.
I'm just here to watch.
What? What? Was that a shot?
I don't know what he's talking about.
No, you know, well, let's put it this way, Mike. I'll just put it this way. I have never in all the time that we've been doing this have gotten the email that said, what in the world was Mike Spain thinking?
Probably never about very Argentine.
All right. We haven't talked about Donald Trump in a while, so let's start off with Donald Trump on George W. Bush's responsibility for 9/11. Donald Trump says he doesn't flat out blame the president, former president, that the September 11th terrorist attacks happened on his watch, but he can think of three reasons why one could hold Bush responsible, and he might add there are three things that President Trump would do very differently. You have to look at the person at the top. And he said, number one, Bush's immigration policy. Number two, people knew that the FBI, NSA, and the CIA weren't sharing information about potential threats. And number three, George Tenet, Bush's director of Central Intelligence, knew in advance that there would be an attack, and he said that.
Well, you know, I don't like Trump, and I wish that this was causing him more trouble than it actually is. But I think actually the media misinterpreted this. Trump responded to a comment that Jeb made during the Republican debate in which he said his brother kept the country safe. And Trump is just responding, how could you say
after 9/11? After September 11th, 2001,
right.
He kept the country safe.
Jeb did not say that. And then Trump jumped on him. And it was a good debating point, and it's a valid point, too. You're not keeping the country safe if indeed 9/11 happened on your watch. You did a good job after that.
But a lot of this criticism, and you know, those three points that Trump made are
right.
Kind of a summary of some of the main points of the 9/11 commission. There were signs that should have been paid attention to more. There was bad communication, et cetera, et cetera. And that goes way back before Bush took the White House. I mean, it goes back into the Clinton administration. So, you know, if he's bringing up these old skeletons that are very painful for people to talk about, he could probably use it against Hillary in a main election, too. But, you know, just bringing it up and associating the name of Bush with 9/11 probably doesn't help Jeb Bush.
Which is probably why he's doing it. I mean, I think that the Bushes are surrogates for each other, and you know, and that he's saying if you criticize one, you're basically getting the other one who's running against him right now, who I think he still appropriately sees as his major rival, even though he's not showing up that way in the polls. I think he's the one that the establishment really wants.
It's where the money is going. Yeah.
Then there's one other thing, and that is if you put Bush into a bad situation where he knows that he messed up, then that's when you start putting people underwater. And waterboarding them and doing all of that just to go that extra mile to sort of compensate for the original screw-up.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things here. One is that Jeb Bush is not responding well to pressure, and so it's a good tactic to attack him. He gets kind of whiny and just fussy. He's it doesn't play well. I watched him on television last night, thinking, God, just come back and answer this with a full-throated anger. Instead, he just whines. Well, we'll see how it turns out. It's very very unpresidential.
It's like he's poking him. It's very sophomoric, and it's working.
It is. And then the other thing is that
I'm sorry to interrupt, sure. But you have covered this governor. Is that his typical response, or does he normally come out with
all... I don't recognize this Jeb Bush.
Okay.
In Florida, he was masterful, in control. He took criticism and parried it well, and he was under a lot of attack for many things in Florida. So, no, I don't like this or recognize this. The second thing is that even from the mouth of Trump, I like hearing some criticism of George Bush. His intelligence gathering was, of course, abominable. We could just look at weapons of mass destruction. Don't even have to go back to 9/11. Mm. That's really kind of refreshing. Mm.
Except, should we base our opinion on this Bush on that Bush number one?
I think it's legitimate in this regard that many of the same key advisors of the earlier Bush are the people behind this campaign. He's already outlined his his closest allies, and a lot of them are the same names, and
just like we will link Hillary with Bill.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I think it's legitimate. I don't think you can how can you not?
In both cases, those people ally themselves with the policies that they're now being connected to. Jeb was a wholehearted supporter of his brother, and so was Hillary of her husband.
Yeah, and they can't have it both ways. They can't say, I'm independent, I'm different, I don't take any blame or any criticism for what happened under the previous administration with someone with my
implicit, Mike, in the whole thing is the fact that he endorsed his brother. I mean, he said that George did the right thing and kept us safe. Once you say that, as they say on
then
Law and Order, you
the Iraq War, weapons of mass destruction, all of that's on the tape. All of that is on, waterboarding, torture, Guantanamo, all of that is now on the table. Yeah. Of course, I don't know how many people are as upset about that as they are about the invasion of Iraq, which was a total farce, that it was based on incorrect information.
It will
go
down as one of the great mistakes of America.
So we are in agreement that George W. was not a great president. It appears we have agreement on the panel.
Well, his foreign policy was problematic.
And we are in agreement with Trump at the same time.
So how does that play down the
Well,
down the road?
I tell you, Joe, I think while everybody has poo-pooed Trump from the first moment, saying he has no chance, he can't win, I think they're going to have a tough time denying this to him. I do.
So it seems like we've been in a fog for a couple of weeks, and I don't know if that's just personal or...
There was a fun drive in there.
Right. Well, that's right.
And the Mets.
It's exactly where I'm going. But it seems that there was a point where people say, oh, well, Trump's numbers are dipping. He's not as solid as he was. But from what I see, he's still pretty much where he was, right?
He
hasn't moved all that much.
The figure that I thought was interesting was if you combine the numbers of Carson and Trump, you're getting near to 50% of the Republican electorate. That's frightening.
Yeah.
50% are not looking at candidates that we have here defined as viable.
Well, as I've said many times in columns and other places, this is slim pickings riding the bomb down in Dr. Strangelove. I can't believe what the Republicans are doing. And I just can't believe it when it comes to women, when it comes to Hispanics, when it comes to immigration. These are all people who are people like them are potential voters. And I think that they're really messing up. And they can't get around it because they're going to get beaten if they're primaried.
Did you hear what they were saying, Republican operatives? Were saying in Plano, Texas this weekend, where there was a huge megachurch, had a conference, brought in six of the Republican candidates to talk about faith and politics,
right.
Something that did not come up at all, I might mention in the Democratic debate.
Well, Josh Fisher doesn't like this conversation the way it's going, I don't think. He says, Clinton-era CIA budget cuts had much greater impact on why 9/11 happened. There was little Bush could do in the year he was in office prior to 9/11.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, to get back to my thought,
Plano, Texas. Fundamentalist Christians.
Yeah, what the Republicans were saying there was that evangelical Christians represent a voting bloc for Republicans, and I don't think this is true, but they allege that it is equal to or greater in number than feminist, gays, African Americans, immigration advocates, all the little groups, as they put it, that Democrats are going after. Mm. We can be just if we get people of faith out to vote.
I think that would be disproven. And in fact, I think that would be disproven. But, you know, it's good rhetoric. What's amazing to me is that, you know, you get people at that like Ted Cruz and Ricky Santorum who are equating, like Cruz equated ISIS, he used ISIS in the same sentence as the gays. Now, if ISIS took over, the first people they'd kill is the gays before they got the rest of us. I mean, it's ridiculous rhetoric that plays to a small crowd that did play a big role in the 1980 election,
yeah.
And it did.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it has that ability to turn out the vote like it did back then.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, get a few letters, and then go to BBC News. We'll be right back after this short break.
Yay.
Support comes from Robert C. Parker School, North Greenbush, New York, announcing Parker Pre-K Evening Open House on Tuesday, November 17th. ParkerSchool.org for more information. Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering now booking holiday parties at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout Western Massachusetts. BlueHeronDining.com/catering. And from The Button Box, Sunderland, Massachusetts, makers of R. Morse concertinas, also selling new and used concertinas and accordions, and providing repairs and accessories, buttonbox.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Let's get to a few letters. We have a couple, and then we'll move on to other topics and hit some news at the bottom of the hour.
Okay. So David Kay says, I don't like Trump, but I think it's good that Trump is able to criticize fellow Republicans. It shows his free choice. Anybody? Well, I think it also shows he's a superb, intuitive politician. In other words, he's not taking prisoners. If he doesn't criticize them, where is he? But he's showing himself as that kind of guy. You know, it's always dangerous to take a look at Andrew Cuomo or Trump or anybody else and say their motives, their action may be good, but their motives are bad, because we don't really know what their motives are. We can't get inside their brains, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's tough to do. Okay. John says, I often wonder if Donald Trump's main goal is to knock Bush out of the running. He seems to love hitting Bush above all others. If it's true, I'm with him, though just that far. And that's from John. Well, the truth is, as I said before, remember when I said it? Did you remember when I said that Bush is his main?
Yes, my
he sees Bush as the main rival.
Although
because when they get to the convention and the backroom deals all start, remember that Trump only has 35% right now of the Republican voters. Let's say he goes in there with 35%. That leaves a lot of other percentage and a lot of possibility of backroom deals taking place, and he knows it.
Though if you were the other candidates, current and former, whether it be Lindsey Graham or Ben Carson or, these guys have certainly taken their, Carly Fiorina, have certainly taken their lumps from Trump as well.
True. But,
I mean, he has come out. It seems that he's spreading the wealth when it comes to being a detractor.
Well, even though I have such great respect for everybody else on the panel, I would mildly disagree with that, Joseph, because, you know, I think he keeps coming back to Trump now. If he thought that...
to Bush.
To Bush, I'm so sorry. If he thought that this was, you know, that the doctor was the problem, he'd be all over the doctor's case, old Carson's case. But I think he sees Bush as the real rival here.
People are still, some people are still believing that there will be some event or some comments or some words or some revelation about Trump that will eventually knock him out. And if that does happen, and that could, you know,
sure.
He's volatile.
Could happen.
If that were to happen... he's taken out a lot of people. He will have damaged Bush, clearing the way for somebody else to come right in, like Cruz or like Rubio or who knows. So, I mean, a lot can still happen, I guess is what I'm saying. And his attacks with Bush don't help Bush should that scenario play out.
Well, maybe it's my antipathy towards those guys you just mentioned. But I think that the Republican establishment goes for Bush. I think that he's the guy that represents their face, who they are, and it's much more likely than Rubio or Cruz.
Right, but then they lose the general election because he's so associated with old, white, rich guys.
I refer you back to Slim Pickens riding down the bus.
Yahoo!
Okay, did you guys see Bernie Sanders?
Oh, my God!
The Bernie Sanders imitation by Larry David. Oh, my God, on Saturday Night
Live. That was so good!
And, I want to talk about these podiums. What do you do with your elbows?
And the email.
The one pair of underwear.
Oh, I thought the one pair of underwear on the.
Really?
They asked him. I saw him on TV this morning. They asked the real Bernie Sanders how many pair of underwear he has, and he stopped for a second. He says, "I have more than one. This is just a joke. Now I have three. No, I have several. I have adequate undergarments." He says, right?
But you can tell the first person to post that clip and make it go viral was the Sanders campaign.
Oh, they loved
were on
it.
That
they
for
loved
seconds,
it.
And why not?
And
it was
the whole
brilliant.
Thing was brilliant.
No,
though.
They loved
yes,
it.
And
Alex
absolutely.
Baldwin as Jim Webb. Yeah. It's really I bring
I
this up.
Here.
I bring this up because the political satire is better than the political coverage in this race.
Oh, well, yeah, because it's hard to beat. Yeah. And you have to be really good to beat reality.
Well, I thought that the web stuff where he would say, I don't get enough time.
And then he'd just salute and pass.
No. And then they would say, what about this? And it was clearly embarrassing to say, I pass.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation here on the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Monday, the 19th of October. Very nice to have you with us. A reminder, you can join in on the conversation roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Let us move on to other topics. The Obama administration shut the door Friday on drilling in Alaska's Arctic Ocean over the next 2 years, canceling auctions for drilling rights in the Chukchi?
I think so.
Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. The decision by the Interior Department was not surprising because it came less than a month after Shell Oil canceled the most advanced exploration project in the region because of disappointing results from a test well and high costs at a time when oil prices are extremely low.
So Obama's taking a lot of garbage for having, among his liberal constituency, right?
Right.
For having done this in the first place. He did it probably to satisfy, you know, American oil and business, and I don't know. But it doesn't much matter. But he's clearly saying to himself now, well, I'm not going to take the heat if they don't even want it.
Well, and see, I think it's even more planned than that. I think he knew it was not an economically feasible time to make this work. So he has the plus of saying, yes, I'm in favor of it, and now it isn't going to happen anyway, and he does this reneging thing. I don't know.
Wasn't one of the reasons that he allowed Shell to go in there, though, to stake the ground because Russia and other countries were claiming some of the resources in the North Pole, and they wanted to keep our hand in it a little bit?
It's a really good point, Mike, because Russia is all over the Arctic, which becomes incredibly valuable as the ice melts away and you can go in and explore or sail through it. And we have not any place in the world that I can see stood up to Putin. So that's a good thing.
And China also in the Pacific. Same deal.
That's right.
Yeah.
Actually, he has stood up to that. I mean, Obama has spoken out about that. I've not heard him do anything in the Arctic.
This was also the quintessential 5 o'clock Friday story, right?
Yeah.
They
no
released
paid
it
any
5
attention,
o'clock
right.
on Friday. It hit some Saturday papers and then just died.
Then died, yeah.
But he didn't get around us. Yeah. Here we are.
Well, that's because of Rosemary, because I, quite frankly, even in looking at the stories,
yeah, you didn't have it.
I didn't have it. And Rosemary was like, yeah, remember this?
This is I signed up for solar panels this weekend, so my environmental consciousness is highly raised.
Your radar was
pinging. But this is not environmental, if you'll notice, not the original decision allowing drilling, and nor is the now rescinding of that. It's economic. It's just it's not environmental at all.
But Alan, I think you're right. It does let Obama say, I let you in there, and then he ends up his presidency as having suspended it. So he looks good both ways.
Yeah, he does.
Speaking of which, Rosemary, where's your mom? You keep saying you're going to bring your mom here, but then you don't bring her.
You have news on this.
Mom is coming to November 13th to
the big
public roundtable, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. Will she be on the panel or what?
Oh, no, she's too shy for that.
Oh, well, I can't wait to meet her. She's produced such a remarkable daughter.
She's produced, actually, she will tell you, 5 remarkable daughters.
Yeah. I once asked Elliot Spitzer when he was governor. I was doing an interview with him. Remember him? I
remember him?
Mike's wondering where this is going.
We're talking about Rosemary and her sisters and her mother.
Get ready.
Okay. I'm looking.
So
it's
I
better
said,
than Vera Argentina.
We'll see.
Yeah. The jury's still out
still
on
out
that,
that,
I think.
Yeah.
Now I forget where I was going. Okay, so
Elliot Spitzer.
Elliot Spitzer. I said to him, thank you, Mike. That was great. Very helpful. I said to him, is your father proud of his son? And he said, which one?
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
The brain surgeon?
Yeah. Yep. Okay, enough about us. World events, please.
Here we go.
For two.
Let us... let's go to the other story that I wanted to mention, which was right on my screen and now isn't, and now it is. Our friends in Canada are voting today.
They're so cute and colorful, aren't they?
Canada is a wonderful country.
We have the we have the Canadian elections and we have the Egyptian elections. So we have election news, but let's focus on Canada first.
I would say so because in the Egyptian elections, I don't think there's much doubt about what's going to happen. Al-Sisi is going to win.
And in Canada,
unpredictable
and
it is.
And plurality is more important than popularity, as the headline of the
NYT.
New York Times says.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, the one of the stunning things about the election is that it's extended to almost, but not quite, 3 months long. And here we're like a year away from even the first kind of voting or balloting.
Yeah.
And so it's all very compressed. And then the other interesting thing is that Muslim dress, how the Muslims dress their women, has become this huge issue in Canada.
Yeah, enormous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whether Harper, after 10 years, he's pretty popular. He's had a very stable time in Canada, which is usually good for you. There was a huge recovery, better than many other of the developed countries since the downturn in 2008. And he has run into trouble because he does not believe that women who work for the federal government or having ID pictures taken should be allowed to wear the najib, which is the total covering of your face, except for your eyes. And that's become very controversial. I think women should just be allowed to wear whatever they want. Let's get over this.
It's Trumpistic in a way, in that, they ain't us, and that makes them bad. That's the underlying theme.
Yeah.
And we can't have that. Now, the Canadians have always seemed to me to be a superb group of people. And always have had their feet on the ground and are smart. And it seems to me that it would be hard to believe that they're going to fall for that.
Hmm. Well, the interesting dynamic is that you don't need a full majority to become or to stay prime minister, and you can have some very hostile enemies as long as you can put together some kind of coalition, something they're unable to do in the House of Representatives. The Republicans are unable to do.
Well, we have a different system,
Right, a different system. And in that, you really recognize that you're not going to please all the people all the time, and you can try to get a lot done. But what I find fascinating, just a little side note on this whole story, is the name Trudeau is back.
Yeah, a little legacy candidacy there, too.
Just like Jeb and Hillary, they have their dynasties,
Justin Trudeau is the Liberal Party candidate, who is the son of Pierre Trudeau, 43 years old, the youngest of the candidates, so...
It's amazing how little we know of the system. It's still right our next door neighbor, and most Americans are very unaware of this election or of the system.
Or of ours.
Well, that's true.
If you're right, Alan, and when you add in that they're another country, it's even worse.
Yeah, foreigners. Yeah.
Well, I like the Trudeau's cartoons.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that is another one.
I don't think he qualifies to run there.
Gary Trudeau is not related to the prime minister family.
That's true. I knew that.
Yeah. Harper has been in for 10 years. That's a lot. He was conservative. I mean, is it such a bad thing if he's cashiered out?
Did you see Rob Ford showed up at a rally that was for Harper?
Oh, my goodness.
Which can't help.
And there's a voice from the past.
And has been elected as a city councilman.
He's right,
with
city
councilman. Everything that happened to him. Unbelievable.
People are forgiving in Canada.
Well, oh, yeah. There is that.
A polite society. let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll tackle some other stuff. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back with more.
Support comes from Schoharie Valley Farms, home of the Carrot Barn, a farm for all seasons, with valley-grown fruits, vegetables, and greenhouse crops, local meats and dairy, plus a full deli. SchoharieValleyFarms.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Proctor's presenting C.S. Lewis, The Screwtape Letters, the live theatrical comedy about the struggle between good and evil, October 29th, proctors.org for tickets. And from Colorful Stitches Fine Yarn, Lenox, Massachusetts, featuring natural fiber designer yarns for hand knitters and crocheters, colorfulstitches.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your thoughts and criticism and praise and or. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So, Mike, let us talk a little bit about dredging and where we are in all of this in our environs.
Right. We're talking about the Hudson River, which 6 years ago, the General Electric Company, after a protracted legal fight with the Environmental Protection Agency, agreed to remove hot spots in the Hudson River between Fort Edward plant and Fort Edward, where they had been discharging PCBs for decades into the Hudson River. PCBs, of course, are a chemical that's used to make electrical capacitors, but they also damage wildlife, and they're believed to cause cancer. It's the reason there's no more commercial fishing of bass and other fish in the Hudson River, because the presence of PCBs in the fish are risky and should be avoided. Anyway, they agreed to do this. 6 years, $1 billion later, GE announced a couple weeks ago they're done. They're clearing out. They've fulfilled their requirement. They're moving on, and they want to take down the dewatering plant, which is a huge facility in Fort Edward that they use to take the sludge that they pull out of the river and let it dry, and then they put it on railroad cars and have it shipped out of state where it's buried. And that's the issue, because there's more PCBs in the river, and there's some disagreement over how they should be removed. And in this particular case, there's a canal that's kind of north of Troy, or from Half Moon all the way up to Fort Edward, a series of canals called the Champlain Canals. And they haven't been dredged and cleared since the 1980s. The state is supposed to do that to keep the channel open for commercial navigation, but it is not open for commercial navigation now, because a lot of heavy ships and wide ships can't get through it because the sludge is built up. The problem is the sludge contains a lot of PCBs. It also came from GE's Fort Edward plant, and it's going to make it very expensive to clean it up. There's estimates now it'll be $180 million to remove the, just to clear the channels, which is normal routine maintenance for the Canal Corp. And some are pressuring, you know, local communities, politicians, some of the key people in the overseeing of the Hudson River are saying that GE should pitch in and help pay some of the costs, but at the very least, don't take away all these equipment that's up in Fort Edwards. It's going to even make it more expensive and less likely that the canal will be cleared up.
Wait, I have a great idea.
Yes.
Let's eschew, let's forgive GE their regular taxes and let them clean it up. Oh, I forgot.
That wouldn't save us anything.
They don't pay tax. Okay.
Well, there is a political aspect to this. The state has been pretty mum on this. The Cuomo administration, the Environmental Conservation Department for New York State, has not, and the Canal Corp, have not been publicly pressing GE, just like about everybody else has been pressing GE to keep the equipment there and stay involved in this in some way. And some are saying it's because Cuomo wants to negotiate GE moving its corporate headquarters from the state of Connecticut back into New York State. Others say it has to do with some other big development that they want to get GE involved in Utica as part of the whole SUNY technology effort. And in any event, they don't want to tick off GE and Jeffrey Immelt by pressing them to clean up their mess in the Hudson River. This is what the opponents are saying, because they want to a more favorable arrangement with GE elsewhere in the state.
Well, here's my question. What's the advantage to GE to move the equipment?
Well, there must be – there's two things. I mean, there's probably some – they're probably leasing most of it, so there's some cost to it, which probably could be shared by other stakeholders. But the other is, once they get out of there, they know it's over. It's like done. It's, you know, dash 30 dash at the end
job.
Of the story.
We did it.
We're out. Yeah. That's what they're saying. You know, we're proud about what we did. We agreed to do this, and we've spent $1 billion, 6 years doing it. And now we're done.
But the other side of that is, will they ever be done? If they start keeping the stuff and they start, I mean, when are you ever going to say, okay, we're done?
Right. The big question is, can we now eat Hudson River fish? Can you now go fish? Is it safe to swim? I mean, you know, all those things. And that's going to be decades before that'll happen. However, because of the dredging, it'll be much sooner. It might have been centuries before it would happen had they not done the dredging. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what they did do was maybe 60% of the cleanup, and now there's perhaps 40%. That's what some estimates have been. And our story today by Brian Nearing, just the news of it is that the State Canal Corp is, which is not saying anything publicly, has been told they have to go back to the drawing board and work up another plan for dredging the canals to open them up between the lower Hudson in the mid-Hudson and Fort Edward in the North Country. Some people want these canals open. They say it'll open up a lot of commerce between Lake Champlain and all the way out to the down the Hudson and out, and they can't do it until these canals are opened.
We have many letters, one on this and several on some of the stories that we've talked about before, so let's go to those.
Okay, our friend Julius, a regular correspondent, says, don't forget the Canal Corporation is still part of the Thruway, courtesy of Mario, and operating expenses come from Thruway tolls. All right.
And then well taken.
What'd you say?
No, point well made. There's a lawsuit, by the way, by the truckers, you know, this interstate trucking agencies that say because you know, we're paying tolls on the thruway and we're supporting the Canal Corp, that's illegal and they're trying to get it blocked. So that's a very controversial issue.
40 miles from Albany, forget it, I never shall. Okay, well, anyway, you have to know your folk music. Bonnie says, doesn't wearing a Naji render a photo ID pointless? Women may cover whatever, but we are sapiens, and facial expressions are our earliest form of primary communication. Who else covers their faces? Robbers and others up to no good. Uh-huh. except for the Lone Ranger. One can carry conservative dress too far. It speaks to erasing a woman's presence altogether.
Well, this is all culturally and religiously tainted. The French have refused to take official photo IDs with any face covering.
Right.
But a lot of other places do not. And, equating Muslim conservative dress with bandits might be a little controversial. Mm-hmm. I'd be a little judgmental.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's more of an issue of safety. If you want to maintain public safety and have right. passports and, get on the planes, you should be able to have some way to identify someone. Maybe right. there's a way around it with some electronic or some foot fingerprint or something, you know.
But this is not a case of safety or identity. It's
cultural.
Work. During work in Canada, Harper would say you cannot wear a covering. Mm. And
If a priest or a minister were employed by the state, could they wear their collar or their garb on the job? Would that unduly
they
influence
can.
Them?
They can. There's no law in the United States against that.
But not
yeah,
in France,
could.
Right?
France is different. France is worried about being the Islamization, and yes, they have taken steps like that.
There have been issues in the U.S. like where a priest is also an attorney, and if he's a defense attorney, the jury
would
might be
swayed
by his
yeah.
Roman collar.
Then you have constitutional rights that right. That are clashing. Your right to personal
expression. But I don't know how somebody at
right
the Department
to trial.
Of Audit and Control sitting doing their job wearing their religious garb would matter.
Well, I'm just fascinated with the idea that what women wear is just exercise people so much. It isn't what Arab men wear. It isn't what, hippie men wore. It was the women that made you crazy. And that's just our Puritanism, I think.
Robert says, first of all, he says, your ignorance about Canada is appalling, filled with stereotypes. First of all, Harper's regime has been like Dick Cheney running Canada. He has had environmental research libraries trashed, literally put in dumpsters. His push for tar sands oil in Alberta, his home province, has been relentless. He's also disbanded Parliament when it suited him. Canada is still a British possession. The Queen is head of state, and her holdings are crown land with all mineral rights below anywhere property of the state. Oh, okay, and then I'm not reading the rest. And then Wayne says, I think Larry David should start a new show where he plays the Sanders-type politician running for president or as president. I'm laughing just thinking about it. John says, the Canadian economy and social safety net has suffered more recently due in part to lower oil revenues and Harper's rigid ideological proclivities, which ape the U.S. brand more than the previous progressive conservative governments. The rise of the conservatives, formerly progressive conservatives, they dropped the qualifier in 2008, was due more to corruption and disarray in the Liberal Party than anything else. And then he goes on.
See,
our
listeners amaze me again.
Yeah.
Look at the depth of knowledge that we, in two letters we've seen about Canada.
I think the point that most Americans have very little understanding and knowledge of Canada, it's regrettable.
Or interest.
Or interest. How far away is it from here? 140 miles?
Yeah.
150 miles?
But I think Alan's point is also well taken. I mean, you have the trouble just finding that interest in our politics.
Yep, so. And that's sad. That's an indictment.
And then Bob says, Rosemary, please clarify your remark. I can't believe you really meant that women should wear whatever they like in all circumstances, such as when testifying in court, serving in the military, or going through airport security. And that's Bob.
Well, I don't think there should be laws governing what they may wear. Obviously, if you're going to go to court, you probably don't want to show up in a miniskirt and knee-high boots, but there's no law that stops you from doing that.
Well, you think that's on par with each other, like the miniskirt and the thigh-high boots as opposed to the veil?
Covering the face?
Yeah, it's what women choose to wear, Ellen. I do think it's akin to each other.
Okay.
And there is, we do have a First Amendment that allows for personal expression.
Okay. Donald says, speaking of Canada, Canadian Ambassador Ken Taylor has passed. He rescued many Americans during the Iranian hostage crisis and in my book is a true hero. The United States should always be indebted to him and his wife, Pam. I only heard one mention of his passing in the media on NPR this Friday. Yes, indeed. Okay. And Cody, the GE situation, another example of individuals hiding behind corporations. People made these decisions would have had deleterious effects on the environment and on the people that live near the river and consume food from it. If an individual dumped these harmful chemicals in the Hudson River, they would be prosecuted. But if a corporation does it, they only get fines.
And
should point out that when they did discharge PCBs, it was not against the law.
Yep, that's true. Yeah,
it was legal.
A panel, whatever a person wears vis-a-vis religious emblem is fine, so long as it doesn't hide the face in capital letters. Okay.
That's just easy to say because there's only one religion, not very popular in the United States at this time, that has women wearing things that hide their face. So.
And Jack says, I have not heard anyone when discussing the question of ID pictures of Muslim women wearing the hijab talk about the whole point of an ID picture, which is to identify in capital letters the person via facial recognition, whether by another human or by a machine. There can be no point to photograph a picture of a hijab, even when the eyes showing, unless one always has an iris recognition machine available.
Well, technology could solve some of this.
The hijab, by the way, is that does show the face.
Right.
You wrap your hair, but...
Tom wants to know, I'd love it if Rosemary would tell us what she thinks about the solar panels once installed. By the way, Stephen Harper is just a transplanted Republic blogger.
Yeah, he is very conservative. I'm a nervous wreck about the solar panels. I woke up in a panic the day before signing it and read 30 pages of fine print to look for what have I missed. But it seems like the right thing to do, and yes, I'll let you know.
And George says, I fault to W. Cheney et al. For 9/11, since Richard Clark et al. Were running around the White House with their hair on fire, warning of an imminent attack, and Cheney and company didn't want to hear it. All they were interested in was national missile defense, a boondoggle for the M1 complex, and getting rid of Saddam. I especially blame them since they made so much of keeping us safe after that, in quotes, thanks a lot. All right.
Yes, W is to blame.
All right, we have about a minute.
Okay, and then finally, Josh says, is Rosemary denying that Clinton CIA cuts did not influence 9/11?
Are you denying that, Rosemary? Are you?
I deny it.
We didn't discuss it, did we?
It's those cuts to the CIA by Clinton.
I need more time.
That's called putting words in somebody's mouth.
Yeah.
I need more time. All right, we are out of time, and no. I thank our wonderful panel, and this exact panel will be here tomorrow, so we'll just pick up the conversation tomorrow as if we never left.
Cool.
All right.
Let's just tape it now.
Right, we'll just sit down and do it all over again.
Don't tempt me. Okay, we'll be back after this short break.